thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to another episode of Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am honored to be your host. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. So we have a different format. Instead of doing a monologue, I'm going to be doing an interview. And I have a special guest. His name is Wade Bearden. Now, Wade and I went to the same college. We had some of the same mentors. We took a lot of the same classes together. And we've been able to stay somewhat connected through the years since that time in our lives. And Wade is releasing a new book called To My Friend Who Left the Faith, A Letter to a Prodigal from a Prodigal. So Wade, welcome to the show, and we're excited to hear about this new book.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I'm excited to talk about it. I'm glad to talk to you too. I appreciate the show, and it was good. I think back to our time at college, and we were in the same small group, I think, for a little while too. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. That was a long time ago now.
I just feel so old. Like I look back and I graduated in 2009 from college.
Yeah.
And I don't know where the time has gone. It's just, it's wild and it's crazy. But yeah, I loved our time at college. I thought it was great. A lot of good memories.
Yeah. We're getting old. It's not a bad thing.
My mom was like, "Hey, there's a new pastor at our church, and he graduated from the same college you did. Maybe you went to school together." And she's looking him up, and I was like, "Mom, he was the class of 2020.
Yeah,
like that was a long time before me." And she's like, "Oh, okay, yeah.
Yep, I know.
I'm getting old.
It's crazy." So Wade, why don't we start off by just having you tell us a little bit about how this new book came about?
Yeah, that's the question. It's like it's always hard to give a brief synopsis. You work on this project for a couple years, and it's like, oh, how do I boil it down into a sentence?
But sure,
no. So the book you mentioned, it's called To My Friend Who Left the Faith, and it's written as a series of letters to an individual, a friend who is who no longer identifies as a Christian, who no longer attends church, someone that I grew up in church with. And yeah, I mentioned this in the beginning. I talk about this friend, but I also say, hey, I'm mixing in other stories as well. So the big point is that it's not about one particular person, but it's about a group of people. A lot of people I went to church with growing up are no longer attending church. And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. I think a lot of people have the same story. And so my whole thing is, by the end of this, if someone who doesn't attend church reads it, they're like, yeah, I can kind of see myself in that story. So I talked to my friend about my own journey, because after high school, I had to reassess my faith. And that's something that I did in Bible college, but also as a pastor, just trying to figure out what I believed, why I believed it, trying to reconcile my faith with the world.
Sure.
It's not just what you believe, but it's also how you experience life. And so I talk about my story, and I share a little bit about this friend's story.
Yeah.
Not a ton. It's real general, but I share the story of how I came to understand the gospel in my life. And this is not a book that I give to people and say, hey, like, give this to your friends because it's going to convince them that Christianity is true. My goal is not even to say, hey, here's a book that I wrote to a friend, and my goal is to convert you at the end of it. My goal is to share my story and share what I believe and hopefully answer some questions. and even apologize for the way that I acted at certain points in my life, and hopefully give people nuggets to think about. So that's the point of the book, and I hope that I shared my story and shared what I believe with empathy and with grace, and hopefully it'll be help to people who are rethinking their faith, but also people who know other people who are rethinking their faith, or maybe parents who are walking their teenagers or young adults through seasons of doubt.
Yes, for sure. I think it's a very relevant book, as a lot of people are going through a process of deconstruction. That word deconstruction is very popular today. If you're comfortable, Wade, give us some background into your friendship with the person that this book is addressed to, if you're comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've talked to some people about some stories, and they're like, you know, Wade, you can write what you want because I trust you, and so I've shared a little bit, but I've also said, hey, I don't know if I can share too much more than what's in the book, just for privacy reasons. But I think the story is something that a lot of people can relate to. An individual who grew up in church and was hurt by the church, experienced just suffering in general, experienced hypocrisy by people who said they loved Jesus, and then experienced intellectual questions. I don't think there's one reason why people choose to leave church or leave the faith. Usually it's a collage, and it's hard to look at somebody and judge them for this.
Oh, for sure.
Multiple pastors that they knew hurt them, or multiple Christians that they knew didn't live out the love of God, when they experienced suffering and pain, and then when they experienced intellectual doubts and they didn't really have anybody to talk to, or when they talked to people, they were like, hey, you just got to have faith. And so the people that I write about experience these in one shape or form. Not everybody experiences doubt in the same way.
Yeah.
And so I address that by talking about, hey, here are the times that I've been hurt by people in the church. Here are the times when I've experienced suffering, and here's some of the intellectual questions that I've worked through, and then things that I'm still kind of trying to reconcile in this very broken world. And it's been great to see different people receive this in different ways.
Sure.
And two, it's people's like, hey, is it an apologetics book? I mean, yeah, I've become more and more against apologetic books that are like, hey, like you, the spirit of like, you are, if you don't believe that Christianity is true, you're dumb.
Right.
Like you are intellectually false.
Right.
And more connected to books that are like, hey, here's why I believe that Christianity is true. I'm not gonna say that I don't believe that. But there are challenges. So yeah, it's kind of an apologetics book. It's kind of a memoir. It's kind of a couple of those things all at once.
Yeah, for sure. So Wade, in the book, you define yourself as a prodigal. What do you mean by this, and in what sense is that true?
Yeah, you know, so I talk about the story of the prodigal son, the parable of Jesus, and it's such a powerful parable. And I think that the expectation is, like, when I'm talking to this person, I'm like, hey, you're a prodigal, you know, and God wants you to come home. And that's true. But I see myself in the story as, at times, as the elder brother. You have the brother who didn't quite leave home, but he doesn't quite grasp the love of the father.
Sure.
So he's there, but he doesn't get it. And there were times in my life where I look back and I say, man, that was me. Like, I didn't get it. And so in the book, I say, it should really be the story of the prodigal sons, because that son, he just, you know, he doesn't get the gospel.
Right.
And that was me at times. And so to say that, yeah, I think I was that. I was that prodigal. And then you can get into the semantics of it, or you could say, well, were you ever not a Christian? I don't think there was ever a time when I say I wasn't, you know, a quote unquote Christian.
Yeah.
But there was a time whenever I was prodigal. And so that's how I define myself and in this book. And I do have to even apologize to my friend, and it's an apology to probably multiple people,
right,
for some of the ways that I look down on them. And it's even possible, like, to have a good friendship with somebody and secretly look down on them.
Oh,
because
for sure.
You're like, oh, they're the prodigal. And so that's how I would define it, you know, in my book.
No, that's great. And that's definitely helpful. In your estimation, Wade, what would you say were the circumstances that led to your friend's crisis of faith, or that led to your friends, plural, different people that you grew up with, that you saw walk away from the faith? What would you say were kind of the circumstances? If there was one circumstance, if there were multiple, and how would you kind of define, I guess, the instances or the circumstances that brought that departure about?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because no one person is the same.
Sure.
We all kind of experience it in different ways. And I alluded to it in the beginning, but I think with my friend and even some things that I experienced, just hypocrisy in the church.
Yeah.
I mentioned in my book the story of the unforgiving servant, another parable of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this one individual who's forgiven of so much, but doesn't forgive that other person.
Sure.
And I think the core of it is that person didn't really believe that they were forgiven. They never really experienced that. So why they had to collect in some way. And I think that's what happens to us in church, is we say we've been forgiven and we talk about grace, but deep down, I think sometimes it's a struggle for us to truly accept that. And so if part of our salvation is based on our works, that means we start comparing, we've got to be better than some sort of standard. So we make this standard and we hurt people around us. We've got to push them down in order to make ourselves look better. So we've got to look at people and say, you're not wearing the right thing, or you're not doing this and you're not doing that. Obviously, there is this biblical standard for morality, but if we're not careful, it becomes legalism. And I think I experienced that. I think my friends experienced that, this legalism.
Yeah.
And so you have rules without grace, and that's a terrible combination. And then you have hypocrisy. I mentioned in the book, you know, how many pastors have I known that have had affairs? I mean, it's crazy the number of people that I've known,
yeah,
that have had affairs, that have done something egregious, or that have hurt other people. I mean, it's just pretty wild. And so all that kind of comes together in this perfect storm that I call the incident or the incidents.
Yes.
And it's sad. And for those people who are listening, I think the first thing, you know, when we hear that in church, a lot of times it's like, we say this, oh, you know, that's really bad. But just remember, like, even if Christians act bad, that doesn't mean Christianity is not true. Yeah, I get that. Like, even if I act bad, it doesn't mean Jesus didn't rise from the dead if he did. But I think the first thing we need to do is be like, wow, we're really sorry. Maybe I didn't hurt you, but like, maybe I was a part of that culture in a way.
Yeah.
And we have to mourn over that. Like, we just have to mourn over that. And so, yeah, that's kind of a, you know, hopefully a little bit of detail to answer your question.
No, that's great, Wade. It seems like almost every week or every month, you hear something new in the news about some kind of new scandal that takes place in the church. And it is very sad.
Yeah.
And it is a huge problem. And so it's important to kind of confront that issue head on and really think through that and work through that, instead of just sweeping those things under the rug and acting like they're not a problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Or just like, oh, well, that's, you know, that It's just a couple of bad apples.
Sure.
And I understand that there can be healthy churches and healthy environments, and that that does happen. But then there are a lot of other unhealthy environments, and we just have to be, yeah. And then at the same time, too, as a culture, we're creating this culture, and I think we've lifted up the American church so much.
Sure.
That when people fall, it's like the church has fallen.
Yeah.
And I really feel like we need to learn more from church history, but also look to the global church, look to the church around the world, because it's not just about us. It's not just about America. And hypocrisy happens everywhere, but I think we've gotten suckered into this church celebrity culture, and it's just not, yeah, it's just not healthy.
For sure. No doubt about it. 100% agree. In your book, you use the term emotionalism to characterize your unique church experience and background. Can you explain what you mean by this and give us some insight into why this can be problematic?
Yeah, I grew up Pentecostal. I mean, we went to a Pentecostal school. I don't know if you,
yes,
did
we,
you
yes,
grow
we
up?
Yes, we did, yep.
I think I had a great home church. I think for the most part, my pastor was, he was really great, and he is great. But you go to youth camp. I write a little bit about this, and it's, you have these services, you have these revival services that the goal of it seemed to be to have this real like moment, this emotional type moment. And there, when we read throughout the Bible, we do see these moments where the Spirit comes, and there's these great things that happens. But it felt like to me, in my particular context, that Christianity was about this moment.
Sure.
You know, and it was, there were these people would come down the altar, and men raise their hands, and things were great. And people were like, look at that person. Like, look, God, they're on fire. And it's like they're smoking weed right now outside. You know what I mean? Like, it was that type of culture, and it was all about the feels. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when you don't feel that all the time? And sometimes that happens, right? Because of life, or just for me, I'm more of a chill guy. That's just, people are different. I just didn't ever connect to that.
Yeah.
And when you don't feel it, what next? Now, I do think there is this sense that you can become all about your head and you lose your heart. I think God created our mind. He also created our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore our emotions. The people that do ignore their emotions, that don't feel anything, are serial killers, right?
I was going to say psychopath, yeah.
Yeah, no empathy. I think that became a problem. And so I write a little bit about that, but I try to reconcile some things. And I don't know if there's a way where I'm like, this much is good and then there's this much that's bad. But I try to tell some stories, and hopefully the reader can surmise from there where to go next.
Yeah. No, I could relate to that when you talked about emotionalism, because I grew up in a similar environment. I would say that there was too much emphasis placed on praise and worship in my background. And I think this is true in terms of the denomination that both of us grew up in.
Yeah.
And for me, Wade, honestly, now I'm a musician. I love music. And I think music can be a medium that connects us to God, that connects us to the Spirit. But for me, that's not the primary way where I've grown in my faith or grown in my walk with Christ, is through like praise and worship or singing songs. In fact, a lot of times when I'm in a traditional praise and worship setting, I'll just pray.
Yeah.
For me, there's something about, I want to connect with God by using my own words. And so a lot of times for me, when a song is being played, I'll just kind of stand there and pray to God. because that's not really the way that I personally connect. But when you're in a denomination maybe or at a church where all this emphasis is placed on experiencing God through praise and worship, that can be difficult for those of us who may not connect with God in that way. And I think
I like what you say there, like experiencing God. It is interesting because you'd hear that phrase, man, service was so good today, the pastor didn't even preach. Some of the moments where I've connected to God the most are through the word.
Yeah.
And maybe even through private prayer.
Sure.
It happens sometimes in praise and worship, but yeah, I think there was this huge emphasis on that.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think what you said there was really important and something that I think a lot of people can relate to, because I think that's one of the things that I hear young people bring up is, you know, well, I go to church and it's all about praise and worship and I'm not all that comfortable in that environment. And so I don't really feel like I fit in. And so there's something to be said about the fact that, well, there's so many other ways to connect with God. Praise and worship is just one kind of medium or format where we might be able to connect with God. We can connect with God in nature and going out in hikes and experiencing, you know, just the beauty of God and his creation. And so kind of having an expanded understanding of means of grace or ways that we can experience God in everyday life, I think that's really important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. And it really is this holistic approach. And but if it's you experience God through praise and worship and you stop attending church, all that kind of goes out the window and that's the only way.
Sure.
So it is really kind of this fascinating, like, obviously I think all believers should attend church regularly, their church community. But I think that also deals with us kind of leaving our faith because our faith is compartmentalized.
Right.
And in a way.
For sure. For sure. So getting to another question here, Wade, in your experience, how does the church often deal with doubt? And why is this good or bad? So maybe I know you can only talk about really your experience in terms of how this has played out, but how do you think the church deals with doubt? And maybe how should they deal with doubt if they're dealing with it in a way that isn't up to a high standard, I guess.
Yeah, I think, well, I'll say this. I think the church is better at it now. And that is anecdotal, because I'm only a part of certain, you know, I have a certain amount of experience, but I feel like my church that I attend now, I dropped my book. I feel like we're better at it. Growing up, I think people are a little scared. And I also think there was this difficulty separating major issues from minor issues.
Sure.
And so if you were to say, hey, on the 6 days of creation, I don't know if they were six literal days, or I think God could have used the process of evolution to create us as human beings. If you mention that, it was, well, you're like, that was your faith. Like, you were doubting your faith.
Sure.
And so it definitely seemed like whenever I talked about certain issues or questions, there was this, it wasn't this easy way of saying, oh, okay, yeah, like let's talk about that. It was like, oh, wait, talking about theistic evolution. I don't know if he's a Christian. Or he, like,
yes.
He, his faith is teetering. And so I think we have to be a place where we can have those questions. Now, as it relates to the big questions, we have to be a place where we can ask those big questions. Oh, did you know, is the Bible reliable? Did Jesus really rise from the dead? We have to be able to do that in a way. So I think there's a way to help people be a part of that, because if someone can't doubt and ask those questions in church, where else are they going to go?
Yep.
Like, where's a better place to do that from a, you know, if you're a Christian, where would you say a better place to do that is? So I think that's really important. I do think that if we're not careful, we could doubt in a way that's not healthy, right? And you mentioned that word deconstruction. I think I might use that word once in my book. I don't know. It's become a very controversial word. Yep. And I think in 5 years, we probably won't use that word anymore. Sure. We don't talk about the emerging church. I don't want to compare those two movements, but there are terms that become loaded over time. Yeah. But I think when we talk about deconstruction, it's a matter of really thinking about what we believe, but also rebuilding that. And so I think the church has to do a good job of both. And it wasn't always that way. And I didn't always have a good experience. Hopefully things are better now in certain congregations. At least it feels like that way for me, my personal experience in the churches I've been a part of the last couple of years.
Yeah. So here's a loaded question. What role would you say personal bias and personal desire play in faith? And how have you seen this play out in your life and in the lives of others?
I mean, everyone is biased.
Yes.
In every way. And even read popular history books right now. You can say something is true, but as a historian, you also choose how much information to include, what stories to convey, and how to write
it. Yes.
That doesn't mean your book is bad, but everybody's biased. And obviously, there are better ways to do that than others. And I think I was biased in terms of my faith. So because of that, it was easy for me to look down on people who were doubting.
Sure.
Because I was biased in that sense. I also had to understand how my desires played into all of that. And this, I wanted to be certain of certain things. And so when you really want to be certain, you find comfort in certainty, your biasm speaks in that direction. And so it plays a huge role in everything that we do. And it's so important to assess that. So whether we are a Christian who are asking difficult questions, or maybe someone listening to this or reading the book who's not a Christian, to kind of see where your biasm lies. Do you not want Christianity to be true because of X, Y, Z? And assessing that. As a Christian, are there certain beliefs that you are just so scared to talk about because they were like the cornerstone of your faith?
Right.
So be willing to consider that, consider our biasm. And then also too, like as a Christian, for someone to become a Christian, the Bible speaks clearly that the Holy Spirit has to move them. And so there's this sense too that I was preaching the other day and I was talking about the resurrection of Jesus, and I was talking about exploring your faith. And I just said, hey, if you're here and you're not a Christian, what I would encourage you to do as you're asking these questions, just to pray and say, God, if you're there, you know, reveal yourself to me. Because that's the only way like that we're going to know God, is if he reveals himself to us. And he's revealed himself through scripture, but pray that the Holy Spirit would move our hearts. And so, yeah, we have to be open to our own biasm, and also just understand that if Christianity is true, for those people who are approaching Christianity, if Christianity is true, like God's going to have to reveal in some way to us, and being open to that. So it's not all about me and what I can do. It's about more than that. So it's kind of a windy question.
No, yeah.
Hopefully I've given you a good answer for it, a suitable answer.
No, for sure. That was really good. Wade, in the book, you allude to the fact that people are much more prone to demolish something than to build something, more prone to deconstruct a belief system than to construct or reconstruct a belief system. Why do you think this is, And how do you see this tendency work itself out in our culture today?
Yeah, and for the record, I think this is something that people who are Christians do, and also people who are maybe not Christians do. I think this is something that's a problem just for all of us.
For sure.
I think it's just easy. It's easier. I mean, it's really easier. It's much easier to take something apart than to put it back together. I mean, I took,
yes,
not too long ago, I took my bike apart trying to fix it. And that was a lot easier than putting it back together. And I think it's really easy in our world to maybe float around in sort of an agnosticism. And I don't necessarily mean just being an agnostic, but just in this feeling of, well, you know, I really don't know. It's much easier in our world to do that today.
Yeah.
And we can kind of just, we can amuse ourselves to death. To quote a classic book, we can distract ourselves to death. It really is easy to do that. I mean, if you think about it, even as a Christian, I can get up, exercise, quickly make breakfast for my family. I go to work. I come home, get the kids to bed, maybe turn on a television show or a movie, and then go to sleep. And then I do it all the next day. And then when there's any type of silence in my life, what do? Like, I pick up the phone. Right? And how many of us drive with nothing on the stereo?
Sure.
And it's very easy to just be distracted and not think about the deep questions in life.
Yes.
And I think I quote Pascal, where it's like our demise is not being able to sit in a quiet room alone with our thoughts. Nobody does that. And I'm just as bad. You know, if my wife Priscilla goes into Target and I'm in the car, do I just sit there? No, I get on my phone and I'm watching a funny video or something like that.
Right.
So I think it's a lot easier in our world to do that. It's just simpler. We can say one day, well, I'm not a Christian, or I don't believe this, or I don't believe that, or I think that gun violence is wrong. And then, like, I don't really know where I'm supposed to go from here. And then we just don't ever think about it again.
Yeah.
And so I think it's easy to kind of tear that apart and not really do anything with it. And so we live in that unknowing. The unknowing or agnosticism or anything like that, it is a valid option for many people. It is an option for people.
For sure.
But I think it happens by default, where we just say, I don't know. And like I said, that can happen with political beliefs, religious beliefs, all the, where we just say, I don't know, and we just kind of stop there because it's a lot easier to do that.
No, that's a really good point. It's we can very quickly maybe deconstruct something or critique something, find a hole in an argument, but the process of building or reconstructing something is a long and tedious process.
Oh, it is.
It takes much more time, much more effort. Yeah, you're right. I think that's a great point. So what role should self-criticism, this is something I talk about a lot on my podcast, what role should self-criticism play in our overall criticism?
Man, we were talking about graduating from college 13 years ago. What I think about to like personal beliefs or values, religious, about kids, about family, about finance, about all this stuff. And I look back and be like, wow, I didn't know anything. And what's probably going to happen is in 10 years, I'm going to look back and be like, I got a couple things right, but I'm also kind of embarrassed of that, Wade. I wrote a book before this, Failing Faith, and every once in a while, I might see it on the shelf and just like look at a page, but I'm kind of scared to, because I think there are going to be things where I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said it that way, or I don't know. And so if that's the case, what does that mean? That means right now, I shouldn't be so sure of myself because I'm not right. And I may not know it now, but in 10 years, I'll know it. And so hopefully I get the big questions right. Hopefully I get the main points right. And so I think we all have to act in humility. And that's what I hope I try to do in my book. where I say, like, I was going through all this and I had these doubts and I was upset, but I was like, but I was also a college student, right? And so hopefully people can relate to that. But hopefully when you read this book, you don't get to the end of it and be like, oh, Wade has it all figured out and he thinks everybody should be like him. Hopefully you get, you know, hopefully I've figured out the gospel. I believe the gospel is true. But in terms of my perspective or even the way that I handle situations, I could be wrong in a lot of different ways. So I think we have to do that. But we live in a world that's very polarized, and when we the opinions that get shared the mm-hmm. most are the opinions that are very people who at least position themselves as being very sure, very confident. And so there is this, you know, I mentioned just kind of floating around not knowing what you believe. So we don't want to do that. But at the same time, this sense that we have to be 100% of the right all the time and everybody else is wrong. Like, we have to evaluate ourselves. Now, as a Christian, how do I do that? I look at the words of Jesus, and I try to say, hey, how am I not living up to this? Or how are there passages that I tend to say are about other people when they need to be about myself?
This episode and all episodes of Thinker Sensitive are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinker Sensitive.